My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Nightmares, especially those caused by trauma, not only disrupt your sleep, but can leave you exhausted, on edge, and haunt your daylight hours. How may we turn anxiety-filled or heart-pounding dreams into resources for spiritual growth? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Linda Yael Schiller, says we may learn to safely heal post-traumatic nightmares and their root causes. Linda Yael Schiller is a mind, body, and spiritual psychotherapist, consultant, author, and international teacher. She facilitates group dream circles, provides individual, group, and corporate consultation, and trains professionals working with dreams. Her website is www.ptsdreams.com, and she joins me this week to share her work and new book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Linda Yael Schiller. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Linda, please share with our listeners your early path and how it led to your compassionate calling of clinical social work.
Oh, boy. Well, I think my early path that led me to working as a clinical social worker started in summer camp. I went to camp all my life, both day camp and overnight camp. And then as a teenager, I became a camp counselor. And I remember distinctly, I was about 16 or 17 years old. And I remember saying, I love being a camp counselor so much. I can't imagine another job that I would like as much as this. And then fast forward some 10 or so years later, not only did I get into clinical social work, I specialized in group work. And ultimately, I was a professor of clinical group work at Boston University School of Social Work. So I got to do groups my whole life. So that's how that got started.
What was the calling? There's got to be a calling in any healing profession or avocation. What was the calling to you of doing that work?
It's a very good question. I've been speaking a lot with people about dreams and dream work and nightmares and trauma, which is what my current book is about. But in terms of getting into the healing profession at all, I think really the calling is tikkun olam, which is translated as repair of the world. And I was sort of brought up with that as a value. And I think that was the calling. So there are two levels to the calling. One is, and this is a phrase that if people are familiar, if we remember when Barack Obama was inaugurated, he actually used that phrase, that Hebrew phrase, tikkun olam, that was his calling to the world. And so in general, that was part of what brought me into doing this work. And then in particular, because I work in both traditional and alternative ways, I do a lot of integrated body, mind, and spiritual work. At one point in my career, I really became clear that my calling was to be a bridge woman, to bridge some of the more traditional ways of healing with the integrative alternative styles, so that sort of East meets West and we have a whole package of options for doing the healing work.
Absolutely. When did you first become interested in dreams and their significance?
I had a few dreams as a kid, but nothing that compelling. There are a few dreams that many of us have when we're children that are sort of memorable. I was interested in uncanny and alternative ways of knowing as a child, exploring the mystical side of life. But I wasn't really tuned into dream work per se until I learned how to say yes when a fluke crossed my path. I was in my late 20s and I'm a member of a dance community here in the Boston area. And my friend moved up from New York City saying, I'm so done with New York. It's too much city for me. I'm coming to Boston. It's you know, smaller. I have friends here. The only thing I miss in New York is my dream circle. She said, I'm going to start one in Boston. And will you join? And I said, yes. And then my next question was, what's a dream circle? So my guts knew to say yes before I knew exactly what I was even saying yes to, although I knew it had something to do with dreams, obviously. And in short, the dream circle is a group of people who get together on a regular, semi-regular basis, or it could be even a one-time basis. But in our case, it's been going on for, you know, over 35 years. And we get together on a regular basis and share dreams and share dream work and help each other understand the meaning of our dreams and what they came through to tell us and ask of us. And that's how it started, by that invitation. And none of us really knew very much about dream work at that point in time. But then we went out together and we read books and we studied and we went to workshops. And gradually, as I learned more and more about this wonderful world of dreams, I incorporated it into my professional life as well as my private life.
In addition, when you were a child and growing up, did you also have other experiences that would not fall within material science?
Oh, yeah. Was always drawn to the uncanny and to the mystical. And as a child growing up in the 60s, my friends and I had a Ouija board, as many young people do. And there were many occasions where we kind of shocked ourselves with some of the things that happened, like a candle blowing out in a room with no open windows and no breath, blowing it out. And then in high school, in my youth group, we participated in creating alternative styles of services of worship. And we brought in poetry and music and theater and all kinds of things. And I remember at that point in time, finding a sense of what I now know as the numinous, that experiential way of connecting with the divine. Though I didn't really have a word for it then, I just knew that I could feel it in my body in a way that I didn't feel when I was only saying words from a prayer book. And then I think the next time it happened, I had graduated college and I was on my way transitioning to go spend time in Israel. And I lived in a kibbutz for a while and then stayed and did my graduate work there. But in between graduating college and that, I went to Europe with a girlfriend and we sort of backpacked around Europe for a few months. And I remember being in Greece and on the island of Crete. And we climbed up over a mountain, a hillside, to get to a place to go swimming. I remember we crested the mountain and I looked down and I suddenly had this sense of the land is talking to me. And I could, it's like, it was a synesthesia where I could actually hear the rocks murmuring. And Greece, of course, is an ancient cradle of civilization. And I had always been interested in mythologies from all different cultures, but in particular, Greek mythology. I remember even once as a camper, at an overnight camp, I had Edith Hamilton's little book of mythology with me. And I was reading it just for fun, but like bedtime reading. And I remember a fellow camper said to me, "What are you, like a nerd or something? You're reading mythology in summer?" And I said, "Oh no, these are fairy tales for grown-ups."
Yeah.
But I got that hit of, oh, there's sentience here in more than just human beings. And I was 21 then, right at on a cusp stage of my life.
So the seeds were planted. And now let's talk about dreams. Through your research and understanding, how far have we come since Freud's original dream theory?
Well, we've come a long way since Freud, but we haven't gone back to the richness of our ancestors yet, who had much more of an understanding and worked with dreams as a part of life more regularly than we do in our more modern Western world. I think Freud got it just right when he said that dreams were the royal road to the unconscious. But what Freud did is, because he grew up in the time and place he grew up in and in a Victorian world, he actually backtracked some of his original understanding that dreams can be representative and symbolic of things that happened in our lives. He looked at them as all metaphors through a fairly narrow point of view, that they all had to do with sexuality in some way, shape, or form in your relationship with your parents. And of course, some dreams do, but that's not all of what they mean. We now know that dreams come through to us with multiple layers of meaning. And that's one of the orientations that I actually have brought forward. I've created a way to understand these different layers called the Pardes method, which is a Hebrew word that means orchard. And it's also an acronym for how we read the holy writings and ever deepening layers of meaning in exegesis. So the P stands for pshat, which is the simple layer. The R stands for remez, which are the things that the dream could be hinting at. They aren't necessarily contained in the dream itself, but when you wake up, you go, oh yeah, that reminds me of that. That must be what it is. The first layer is just the content of the dream itself, and then the remez. And then the third layer, the drash, is from lidrosh, which means to chase after or pursue. And this is where we find very, very multiple deep layers of meaning, symbol and metaphor and direction in life and history, family dynamics, things we are grappling with in our physical, emotional health life. And then the final layer, the sod, which means secret, is the mystical or the transpersonal layer, where we can connect with other connections with time and space, see around and peek around the corners of time, have visitations from departed relatives, potentially have prophetic dreams for the future. So we're catching up now, I think, to what our ancestors knew years ago. The indigenous and native peoples always elevated their dreamers to the leaders, the spiritual leaders of the tribe. They were the shamans, they were the leaders. People would come to them for personal insight, for direction for the tribe, for when to plant the crops. And we're just now learning what we used to know, and I think forgot, as we're starting to catch up with knowledge that we had set aside in the service of modern science and linear thinking.
How did you incorporate dream work into your practice?
Well, the simplest way to answer that is when my clients would come in, some of them would start to say, I had the craziest dream last night, or I had the wildest dream, or I had the scariest dream. So for starters, it was simply listening to what people were bringing and responding to it. Because for any other people in the helping professions, if someone comes to you and says, I have a dream, you have many options about how to respond to that, which is, say, tell me more, or uh-huh, or, and how does that relate to what we were talking about last week, or simply ignoring it. I learned to not only pay attention to the dreams, but if someone said, I have a dream, I would say, ask them, oh, and would you like to talk about it? Would you like to explore it together? And as I continued to get people coming in more and more, I learned to use that actually as part of my intake, if you will. And when I'm meeting people initially in the first couple sessions, in addition to gathering a history of why are they coming, what's going on in their life now, something about their family history, their living situation, I will also ask them about their dreaming life. Do they remember their dreams? Do they tend to have nightmares? Do they have any repetitive dream themes? And frequently, between the first and a subsequent session, I will ask people to catch the dream and record the dream they have between first meeting me and the next time we meet. And that often is the jumping off point for the rest of our work together, because the dilemmas, the issues, the problems that people are coming into a therapeutic setting to resolve are often right there in a reader's digest version in the first dream they have after initially starting the therapeutic relationship.
Your first book, published in 2019, was entitled Modern Dream Work. What inspired that book?
Probably simply doing the dream work and the dream circle that I had been meeting with, because it became such an important part of my life. At the time that I wrote Modern Dream Work, we had been meeting for, 15, 20 years, probably personally. And then I joined IASD, which is the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and became immersed in this international community of tremendously fascinating, delightful, warm people from all walks of life who come together out of their love of dreams, scientists and researchers and artists and healers and therapists and spiritual leaders and simply interested lay people who are fascinated with their dreams and interested in learning what we can learn from them. So I was a part of this organization, and I was doing dream work in my personal life and started teaching workshops as well to other professionals on doing dream work in clinical settings, and began offering a dream circle professionally where people come and, you know, pay to be in this group. So I was sort of doing a lot of dream work in my personal and professional life. And I felt that I had something to offer because I had put together several integrated ways of doing dream work. One was this Pardes method that I just described. Another was an integrated sort of looking at somatic and spiritual approaches to dream work, as well as from the mind and the heart. And then the third is a way of working with nightmares called the Gaia method, which is specifically set up to help people who have trauma histories work with their nightmares in a safe way to reduce potential abreaction or re-traumatization. So this was all happening. I was doing all this, and I sort of felt, I have something to share here with other people. But at the time, my daughter was young. I don't know if she was 8 or 10 or something. And I knew I just didn't have the time in my life to write a book right then. But my dream circle, my personal dream circle, said, "Well, Linda, you can start a blog anyway and just write little short bits for now and then later write the book." And that resonated, and I jumped on it and I started a blog, and I wrote a blog called Awake to Your Dreams for 6 or 7 years. And then at a certain point in time, it was just the right time. My daughter was old enough so that I could take more time. And I gathered up 6 or 7 years of blog posts and wrote out a table of contents for myself, and took myself off on a retreat for 4 or 5 days in Western Mass on a lake by myself, and knocked out 60, 70 pages. And then that was that. And I just kept working on it until I got a nibble from Llewellyn.
And what can readers find in your book, Modern Dream Work?
So Modern Dream Work is not the original title of the book. It was when you're self-publishing, you can use any title you want. When you're working with a publisher, they have a stake in wanting to have the book represent in their framework what they want readers to purchase. And I think it's a great title, but my original title was Dreaming Our Way Back Home. So that's the orientation of the book, and it follows the path, in a way, of Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. So I was always struck by that story. It was something I'd watched every single year on TV, you know, of my life growing up. You know, we would watch The Wizard of Oz, and it was always a story that, you know, in our Western world, it's one of our core mythological stories. We can also relate to it. And there's always the question is, was it a dream? Did it really happen? Does it really matter? And at the end, when she comes back from Oz and wakes up back in with her Auntie Em on the farm, and her Auntie Em is saying, "Oh, Dorothy, my dear, you just got hit in the head. You just had a dream." And Dorothy insists, "No, Auntie Em, it was really, truly real. It was not just a dream. It was just as real as you and I are here today." And that stayed with me. And so that became sort of the thread or the theme of Dreaming Our Way Back Home. And in the book, the idea of our dreaming paying attention to and connecting with our dreams, allowing us to connect with our true self and our home, the home base of our soul and our spirit, if you will. And then in the book, I go through a variety of different orientations to working with dream work. I spell out the different sort of styles and techniques that I work with. I show how we can incubate dreams, which means planning, asking a question the day before, something you're struggling with, a dilemma you have that can orient you toward getting an answer in your dreams. So learning how to sort of put your dreams to work for you, how to use dreams to enhance your creativity, and looking at dreams from an integrated body, mind, and spiritual perspective, where we pay attention not only to the messages that our bodies give us and the somatic experience of the dreams, but also using our physical bodies and understanding, helping us to understand what our dreams are telling us. So it's a book that has a sort of a holistic sense of general approach to dream work from what I call a psycho-spiritual perspective.
Are dreams and their interpretations shaped by one's cultural upbringing, faith, or spirituality?
Oh, I would have to say absolutely yes, because we all live in a cultural context and our waking thoughts are affected by our cultural context and our value systems and our interests, and pretty much everything we do is contextualized in the world in which we live. And if people were brought up in various spiritual traditions, they may be pulled toward and oriented toward that tradition. They may also have a negative experience and be pushed away from and want to leave that tradition. So it can go both ways, depending on someone's experience. And then did you grow up in a life of comfort and ease, or did you grow up in a life of struggle and hardship? Did you need to run for your life at some point, either you or your family history? Did you have an orientation about my family is interested in the arts, or no, the arts and mythology and that is too fluffy, and my family is just oriented in math and science? So depending on how you grew up and the values you have, and then what you studied as well, what you learned, both formally and informally, what you put your attention on, right? Because energy flows where attention goes. So at various points in your life, when you put your attention on certain things, the energy flows in that direction. So the dreams would come through to reflect how we grew up. Absolutely. Or in converse, in rejection of how we grew up, if that didn't feel like or doesn't feel like a good fit for who we are as human beings when we reach our adulthood.
Absolutely. Are there universal dreams that we share?
Sure. In addition to the personal cultural context, we are all in the context of a shared humanity. So there are images and themes that really hold true across cultures. Some are personal to your personal life and upbringing and environment, and others seem to have a universal span and resonance. And when we're doing dream work with people, we want to make sure that we respect that the true meaning of the dream, or meanings, plural, because it can have many meanings, belongs to the dreamer. That's one of the ethical statements in IASD, the organization, that we don't tell someone what their dream means. They have their own aha and their own hit on the meaning of their dream. But we can reflect, as Reverend Jeremy Taylor taught us, one of my teachers, you know, we can say, if this were my dream, I might wonder about this, or I might be paying attention to this, or I might want to explore this. We don't tell someone to do that, but we invite them to. And in doing so, we tap into not only their personal story, but the larger stories of the world. So just for one example, dreaming of water often, though not always, of course, has to do with emotions. And that's a fairly universal symbol that water is somehow connected with our emotional life. It might not be in your dream, but that's a place to start thinking about because it is one of those universal symbols.
My guest is Linda Yael Schiller. Her new book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dreamwork. Linda, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your fascinating work.
Thank you. So I have a, you can get the book at on anywhere that you would get books. PTS Dreams is listed on Amazon. You can buy it there. You can get it from the publisher, which is Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing. You can get it straight from the publisher. You can get it at your local bookstore. You can get it at, on an online organization called bookshop.org, which is a consortium of independent booksellers. And if you want to read more about it before making a decision to purchase, I have a website called, the website itself is www.ptsdreams.com. So you can go there to that website as well. And if you wanted just to learn more about me and the my practice and my work, my website is lindayaelschiller.com, all one word.
And we'll be back with more of Linda after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Linda Yael Schiller. Her new book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dreamwork. Linda, this new book, what inspired this very important work?
Thank you for asking. As a psychotherapist, I have been working with people doing trauma treatment for many, many years. And so I have been hearing about people's nightmares as a result of their traumatic experiences. And we know that nightmares are one of the manifestations of PTSD. One of the many symptoms, if you will, or signs if someone is struggling with post-traumatic stress responses and reactions. And I'd been seeing this more and more and knew that I wanted to address it professionally and put together a book about it. But I wasn't planning originally to write another book quite so soon after the first one. And then we got the pandemic. And the world as we knew it shut down. And not only were people struggling with whatever traumas there were in their personal lives, we were all collectively experiencing not just national, but global trauma. And as time has gone on in the past couple of years since the onset of that, we've also been experiencing global trauma. Well, we've been experiencing it for a long time, but we've been naming it with climate change, with the violence in the world, with distress, to put it mildly, around elections, both in America and in other countries. And I really just felt, can't wait, because there are three layers of types of trauma that I articulated in the book. There's the personal layer, the familial layer, and the global layer. And we were experiencing all of those at the same time so intensely that I really felt people needed a guide and some help in helping them unpack and reorient their dreams and nightmares that were so distressing. Because some people were literally not able to function well. So I had a little more time, you know, during the pandemic. I wasn't going out to the movies or to the theater or out to eat. And so, you know, some people use their time for various pandemic projects, like learning how to make really good sourdough bread or learning how to knit a blanket. And that my pandemic project was writing another book. And it got out fast.
and thank you for doing that. Now, let's talk a little bit about definitions. Is there a difference between a dream and a nightmare?
Yes. So they're both dreams, right? So we all dream every night. 5 to 7 times a night, we have REM cycles, the rapid eye movement cycles. We don't always remember our dreams, but that doesn't mean we don't have them. And every dream has several components to it. The difference between a dream and a nightmare has to do with the emotional storyline of the dream. So there's the words, the actions, the scene of the story. You dream and this happened and then that happened and then this happened. And that's your dream. That's your story. But if you go back and say, okay, in the beginning of the dream, how was I feeling? What were my emotions? And in the middle, how was I feeling? And by the end of the dream, am I feeling happy? Am I feeling sad? Am I feeling frightened? Am I feeling terrified? Am I feeling enraged? The emotional resonance of the narrative of the dream is the determination between a dream and a nightmare. If it's a dream that is positive or neutral in its emotional, in your emotional response to it, it's a dream. If the dream is a little bit upsetting, but not terribly upsetting, we might call it a bad dream. But if you have large, uncomfortable, upsetting emotional responses, particularly in the fear and anxiety realm, then that's the definition of a nightmare.
Are there nightmares that are not trauma-based?
Yes. So nightmares can be caused by many different sources, if you will. And some of them are simply developmental in origin. Children, anyone who is a parent or have been around kids know that there's a certain period of time in our kids' lives where it's just sort of developmentally normative to have a nightmare. Young people are pretty much at the mercy of the big people, the older people in the world. And if they're feeling out of control or trapped in their houses or that everyone is telling them what they have to do, well, that's true because they are when they're little. So having nightmares about monsters and boogeymen and being overpowered is sort of par for the course for young children. And generally speaking, if it's not trauma-based, it just passes with time and with good parenting and comforting. So that's one layer of trauma is the developmental layer. Adolescents go through another period of time where they're on their path to finding out who they are. And in doing so, have to, you know, spend some time rejecting everything their parents told them. And sometimes nightmares accompany that part of development as well. So that's one thing. Second, when we have hormonal changes in our bodies, that can create nightmares. Pregnant women frequently report, just as an extreme example of hormonal changes, that they have wild, crazy, sometimes terrifying dreams that they never really had before. We can have indigestion, right? We ate a piece of food that didn't agree with us. We have a tummy ache, and that can show up in our dreams as well. So all of these things can also cause us to have nightmares, in addition to life events that are upsetting, but not necessarily in what we would call big T trauma, right? There's little T trauma and big T trauma. And little T trauma, things like, oh, you know, you had a fender bender, or you were really pretty sick for a while, but you know, you had the flu, but then you recovered. You know, we know about fever dreams, for example. Fever dreams can be nightmares. So these are not big, big life-changing traumatic events, but there are sort of smaller things that we get through more or less on our own. So in addition to the large scale ongoing traumas that people may experience in their personal life, in their ancestral history, or in the state of the world living in traumatic times, we also have these other ways that our inner and outer environments can contribute to having nightmares or bad dreams.
In our first segment, you had mentioned the Gaia method. Please explain this.
So the Gaia method stands for Guided Active Imagination Approach. And I developed this style of working with nightmares because in my experience, many, many people would have a nightmare and then sort of be haunted by it during the day as well. And also, sometimes when dream workers are working with people with their nightmares, in our enthusiasm to say, oh, let's figure out what this means, we've had people get re-traumatized. So I wanted people to have a method where they could safely and comfortably work with their nightmares without risking abreaction or re-traumatization. So based on my experience as a trauma worker, the Gaia method has two legs to it. One leg is Jungian method of active imagination. This is a Jungian psychology where we give life to the images in our dream, in our waking life. And we work with the images from the dream as we are awake and doing the dream work. So that is one leg of the dream work. And it's guided this time because you're working with somebody else. The other leg is best practice trauma treatment. And in best practice trauma treatment, we only go as fast as the slowest part of the person can keep up in order to respect the need for the safety and integrity of all the parts of ourselves, of our being, to be held and protected while we are going into these turbulent waters of the dream. So there are two parts to the Gaia method, and then a bridge between the two. And part one is about getting safe first, gathering resources. And this is based in part on, I'm an EMDR practitioner, which is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which is one of the body mind methods that is sort of best practice in trauma treatment, and a number of other integrated energy psychology and energy medicine techniques also work in this way, where we start with gathering safety before we start to look at the dream. So in our waking conversation with either a therapist or a colleague or a friend or a relative, depending on who you're doing your dream work with, or with yourself for that matter, say, all right, what do I need to be really safe and comfortable before looking at these scary, dysregulating things that happened in my dream? So we gather the posse of all the people, people in their current life, people from their past life, people who are alive, people who are no longer alive, spiritual beings, pets, storybook characters, kids from, you know, characters from movies. And we gather all these beings around. We gather any objects that we might need in order to feel secure, safe, and protected. And we do all this before going into doing the actual dream work with the nightmare itself. So I've had people gather, you know, their parents to come with them into the dream, their best friend. One of my adult clients brought Gandalf, the wizard from Lord of the Rings, to be in his posse of safety before looking at the nightmares. One of the kids I worked with brought Mary Poppins, which I loved that she was going to come and keep her safe in her dream work, because Mary Poppins is this wonderful, magical being. One of my millennials, when we was talking about what objects people want to bring, sometimes people will bring a special talisman or a healing stone or something that has meaning for them. And this young woman said, I'm bringing my cell phone because I want to be able to connect with people. So in case anything goes wrong in there when I'm doing the dream work, I want to be able to reach out and make a call. And my cell phone has a flashlight on it, so I'm going to be able to turn the flashlight on if it gets too dark. I thought that was a brilliant idea of what she could bring with her to do with the dream. And then the bridge before doing the active imagination work is gathering all these resources around. I invite the person to peek inside the dream to see, is there anyone in the dream, or are there any resources in the dream that you may have neglected to mention, or you didn't notice the first time you were telling the dream, that you could have as a resource for you already? And this way, they go inside themselves and find resources that were often already there. They just might not have recognized or named the first time through. So we add the beautiful flowering tree that was off to the side of the forest that they didn't notice the first time as a symbol of hope that was in their dream. Or we add the wise woman who was sitting quietly on a rock in the middle of the landscape that they didn't see when they first told the dream. And add them to, they were already there. And then we gather together all of these resources from outside and inside the dream. And then the invitation is, with these resources, let's go into the dream and see what we need to do to help take the edge off the emotion, help resolve the problem, help figure out the solution. And here's where we might dialogue with the dream characters. We might add resources into the dream. We might figure out what something means. We might use the gestalt version of dream work where we become each person or each object in the dream and speak from the voice of the dog in the dream or the rock in the dream or the monster in the dream. And then IRT, which is image rehearsal therapy, is a way of dreaming the dream forward. So if the dream, if the nightmare ended, for example, and you were not safe and you were either about to die or be injured or something, we can, what I often tell my clients is, this isn't necessarily where your dream ended, but this is just where you woke up. So now let's go back into the dream and redream the dream forward until you get to a place of resolution that feels safe and secure. So the guiding there is simply I to say, and then what happened? And what next? And then what happened? Until we get to a place where the dreamer says, okay, I am now safe. And then we put some closure on the dream work. And I invite people to then take that new dream ending and the new information they gathered from doing this work into their life, practice it, review it, rehearse it, so that it becomes part of their internal world, to slowly replace the nightmare that what either they lived through or they're experiencing in their dreams right now. So we're reframing and repurposing, if you will, through doing this work.
Speaking of reframing, how may shadow dream work help us to identify those aspects of ourselves that make us uncomfortable?
So again, this is a Jungian term, the shadow. And the shadow in our dreams is anything that we are afraid of, anything we are embarrassed of. It's aspects of ourself that were repressed, not conscious of, the dark side of ourself, if you will. And if we don't shine a light and own the dark side of ourselves, we can become ruled by it and or project that onto other people. So by learning to recognize who and what these uncomfortable self parts are, we then get to heal and work with them and transform them so they're no longer interfering with our lives. And the shadow can come through literally as some kind of a dark being or entity, or it can come through as any character in the dream that is behaving in a way that you find distasteful or scary or repulsive or that you don't like. And then we can say, what part of you, or is there a part of you that embodies this character or is embodied by this character? And how do we, what does that dark side need? What does that shadow part need in order to heal so they can be reintegrated into the light?
My guest is Linda Yael Schiller. Her book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dreamwork. We'll be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Linda Yael Schiller. Her book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. Linda, are there activities we may engage in before sleep to produce more positive dreams and better sleep?
Yes, there are three ways to affect our dreams and help ourselves heal from whatever is causing the nightmares before, during, and after we wake up. Before we sleep, while we're asleep, and after we wake up. And beforehand, one of the things that's sort of a simple, beautiful imaging is to surround yourself with a bubble of healing, protective light. And just to image that around yourself, your bed, your bedroom, however large you want it, and choose the color or colors that are just right for you. Often people want to bring through a white or a golden or a blue light. and just but resonate with whatever is right for you. And so that's one thing. And name that as a protective barrier between yourself and your terrifying nightmares, or yourself and things that are too distressing to handle, or yourself and demons and monsters in the night. In doing that, you can also ask for an invocation or a prayer to come through and say, let me only have dreams that are right-sized for me to be able to handle right now. So you can actually sort of program or work on programming your dreams. It takes practice, but to really request from your dream muse and write it down in your journal. I encourage people to keep a dream journal right next to their bed, either handwritten in a journal if you can do that, or if you can't, you know, have some way of recording on your phone or a tablet next to your bed. And write down a sentence asking for what you want from your dreams, including protection against things that are more than you can handle. And say, let me only remember what I can safely handle at this time. And gradually to begin to sort of train your mind to give you bits and pieces rather than all at once. And again, this takes practice. So those are a few things we can do before going to bed. We also, having good sleep rituals and nighttime rituals is really important. So whatever you're doing to get ready for bed, whether it's taking a shower, whether it's brushing your teeth, whether it's putting on your pajamas, do it mindfully and with intentionality of casting off the dross of the day, the worries of the day, whatever happened, in order to put yourself in sort of a clean, fresh state before going to bed at night. Also, very, very important, don't watch scary movies or the news before going to bed. And some of us who are thin boundary people should never watch scary movies or the news. I never watch scary movies, and I don't watch the news. I stay informed. I'll read the paper. I'll listen to, the radio when I'm in the car. But I don't want to see that, A, ever, and B, particularly before going to sleep at night, because that stuff seeps into our dreams. And I can't tell you how many people have nightmares because they watched the news before going to bed or watched a scary movie. So really give yourself a buffer zone between watching things that are potentially upsetting and going to sleep at night. And that can really do wonders for your sleep quality.
Any dietary or hydration recommendations?
That's individual. We know that alcohol is a depressant, so it might help take the edge off if you're having trouble sleeping, but also it can lead you into a place of sort of a darkness. So really pay attention to not have too much alcohol before going to sleep. Certain foods, will keep you awake, right? If you have caffeine, if you have chocolate, these are sort of sleep hygiene things. So, don't have caffeine too late in the day. Don't eat foods that are too spicy or too, irritating to your stomach. Again, that is more of an individual thing. Everyone has a different digestive system. There are things that will help you sleep that, for example, there are many teas out there now. There's one that I love. It's called Sleepy Time Tea. And it's got all sorts of herbs in it. And recently they've been adding valerian to the lavender and the chamomile and the mint to help people sort of drift off into sleep and relax a little bit more. So that's something that people might enjoy, a cup of warm tea before going to sleep.
What advice would you offer the parents of children whose lives have been radically altered by the pandemic and are experiencing nightmares and sleep challenges?
That's a great question. A couple of things. One is to really focus on the connection and attachment between the parents and the children. Because for all of us at any age, in order to feel safe, we need to feel loved, connected, and attached to beings that we think they can protect us. Now, our children have learned that their parents are not infallible, and children learn that at different ages. But since the pandemic, children learn it younger and younger. So for parents to be reality-based and not promise things that they can't deliver, but also to let their children know that no matter what happens, they will be there to support them, to protect them as best as they can, and to empower our children as well, to be able to say, all right, this is really hard right now, and it's really scary, and how are you going to grow up and make a contribution so we don't have to go through this again? So if we can help our children be future-oriented around self-efficacy and around perhaps pointing themselves in a direction of tikkun olam, right, of healing the world in their life path, it allows our kids to get out of just the fear of the moment and think about, okay, how can I transform this distressing time into something else in the future? So having a future orientation is helpful with kids, but also to really recognize the reality. This is true. This is hard. Here is where I can help you, and here is where I can't. And to let kids know what the limitations are, as well as looking toward healing and goals for the future. Depending on the age of the children, having a nightlight in the room, having a little flashlight. Kids love to be able to, you know, turn on a little flashlight and peek under the bed and in the closet and make sure that there are no monsters or bugs, right, in this time of the pandemic. There are a lot of kids having nightmares about bugs with the virus. So that can be very, very useful as well. Teaching kids how to feel safe and protected and sleep. Teaching the kids how to form a bubble of life around light. Oh, that's a Freudian slip, right? A bubble of life around them, as well as a bubble of light. And for kids who are frightened of being alone in their rooms or are afraid of things that go bump in the night, having what's called a transitional object is so wonderful. Something that makes them feel safe or protected, being it a picture of their parents right next to them, an object that helps them feel safe that belongs to one of their parents. For example, when my daughter was young and I would be out of town at a conference or something, she would always take one of my nightshirts to sleep with. And sometimes she'd wear it and sometimes she'd just have it with her in her bed so she could literally sort of smell the pheromones on my nightshirt and feel connected in that way. So to be realistic and creative and comforting all at the same time is a tall order, but that's kind of what we're asked to do, I think, as parents at this time or at any time.
And just as caring people, how may we comfort family and friends who are frightened by the dramatic changes in our world the last few years?
My dad always used to say, "This too shall pass." And I remember that. And I have to tell myself that periodically, that this too shall pass. And that we do go through cycles. And when we look at our past, not only personally, but as a society and as a world, we see that over and over and over again, we've gone through cycles of light and cycles of dark and cycles of going down and cycles of resurrection and coming back up again. And for us to remember, A, that this too shall pass, but B, well, three things. A, that this too shall pass. B, we are not alone, that we can connect with our families, our loved ones, our friends, and with the divine, however we understand and ascertain who and what that is for us. And then three, what can we do to make it better, to make it different, and to have that sense of self-efficacy, of feeling an empowerment to make a difference in the world in a large or a small way, including a very symbolic way, helps us feel not as helpless during these times where it is way too easy to feel helpless and alone.
What would you like your readers to take away from PTS Dreams?
I think the message is that we are all hardwired for healing and we are not meant to stay wounded. This is one of the hallmarks of a form of therapy called ADEP, created by Diana Focia. And the knowledge that our systems want to return to a homeostasis of balance, and that we can change the things that are distressing and that keep us out of balance by turning to resources both externally and internally, and that there is always hope and light.
Absolutely. My guest, Linda Yael Schiller, her book, PTS Dreams, Transform Your Nightmares from Trauma Through Healing Dream Work. Linda, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your amazing work.
Thank you. My publisher is Llewellyn Worldwide Publishing, and you can get the book from Llewellyn. You can, of course, get the book on Amazon. You can get the book from bookshop.org, which is a consortium of independent bookstores. And many of your local bookshops will carry the book, and you can ask them to get it for you if not. I have a website, www.ptsdreams.com. And make sure you type in the www, because I just heard that it might not work if you don't, but I'm going to get that fixed with my web person. So you can find several links to buy the book on the website, as well as learning more about the book itself. And then I have a personal website, lindayaelschiller.com, if you want to learn a little bit more about me and my work.
Linda, thank you so much for joining us and bringing this comforting message that we so need at this time.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Victor. So nice to meet you.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.